Welcome to the God in the Ordinary podcast, an interview show for believers looking for encouragement in how to reveal God in their everyday. Your host, singer-songwriter Sharon Tedford.
Today's guest felt compassion for a marginalised group from a young age. Her pursuit of community for children with additional needs has driven her for years, and now she offers professional help and support for them in the name of Jesus. My guest, Growing Hope CEO, Dr. Naomi Graham. Well, it's really great to be back again. We've enjoyed sharing with you some respins, but it's really good to be able to introduce to you a new guest, Naomi Graham. Say hello to everybody, Naomi.
Hello, everybody. Lovely to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Tell us whereabouts you are in the world. I'm sure that people have probably picked up already that you're not here in America with me.
Yep, I am in the centre of London in my flat.
Right in the middle of London. So if we hear sirens or beeping lorries, it's because you are right in the middle of London. So tell us a little bit about your charity and the work that you do, please.
Yeah, sure. So it's called Growing Hope, and we are a charity that provides free therapy for children and young people with additional needs in partnership with local churches across the UK. So we champion accessibility, and then we also provide these free therapy clinics that aim to bring hope to children, grow hope for families where hope's been lost through isolation or rejection, and share hope in Jesus, because we believe that Jesus brings hope even in the most difficult situations.
Well, that's good, because we believe that too. Thanks for joining us. It's going to be great to talk about that. Before we get into our discussion, our regular listeners will know that we ask every guest to share their reflection on Isaiah chapter 61, and you are no exception. Would you please share with us your thoughts on that passage of scripture?
Absolutely, I would love to. At Growing Hope, our first value is hope. We believe that Jesus brings hope even in the most difficult situations, and that underpins everything that we do. This reflects the proclamation of Jesus found in Isaiah 61. It says, "Bring good news to the poor, bind up the brokenhearted, and proclaim liberty to the captives." Throughout the biblical narrative, we see Jesus bringing individuals from the edges of community right into the centre. Even today, Jesus is consistently drawing everyone into his kingdom. We replicate this in the way that we share hope in Jesus at Growing Hope. Our national charity provides a vehicle of support in order that local churches can run Growing Hope clinics and share the hope of Jesus in their community. Practically, this means that all of our staff are Christians. We offer prayer at the end of every therapy session, sharing that we believe Jesus brings hope. Many people accept that offer. Our clinics are open to individuals of all faiths and backgrounds, and it's such a privilege to be able to pray for families. All our clinic managers also work on a Sunday to enable accessibility within church. This means that we invite families along to church if they'd like to come. Families of children with additional needs often feel isolated. Another of our values at Growing Hope is community, the opposite of isolation. We want everyone to be seen, heard, and to know that they belong. We reveal Jesus by welcoming everyone, warmly embracing them at Growing Hope. Personally, as a leader, I felt called by God to set up Growing Hope and to seek justice for children, young people and families who are so often marginalised. I love the end of Isaiah 61. "For as the earth brings forth its sprouts, and as the garden causes what is sown in it to sprout up, so the Lord God will cause righteousness and praise to sprout up before all the nations." For me, Growing Hope is one way people can experience the hope that Jesus brings, and a way in which we can see God's kingdom come in communities that we live in.
So Naomi, you obviously saw something that needed to be repaired that compelled you to set up Growing Hope. What was it that sparked your passion into life, and when did that happen?
I've always been someone who's really cared about other people. I've always seen need and want everybody to know that they are seen and heard and able to belong. So, you know, at the age of 14, 15, I was doing accessibility stuff. But then in terms of setting up Growing Hope, I'd spent some time in Thailand and India when I was a student. And then after being a student, providing occupational therapy there and working alongside others. And they're really seeing the church step in the gap in terms of therapy provision. I'd then gone back to working in the NHS, and then I actually ended up working in the private practice for a bit whilst I was doing some studying after working as an occupational therapist. And there I had a family who had bailiffs knocking on the door and still chose to pay for private therapy. And all of that kind of culminated into this moment of really asking God, you know, what it was that I had in my hands, and really feeling like he gave me a clear vision of what it would look like to be the church that steps back in the gap and can provide free therapy for children and young people with additional needs, and really support families and give the opportunity to experience hope in Jesus.
Goodness. Okay, there's a few things that we need to unpack there. First of all, tell me, what do you mean by accessibility? Can you just sort of outline for us so that we fully understand what you mean by that?
Absolutely. I think it's maybe helpful to first outline what I mean by additional needs, because then that kind of follows on. So when we think about additional needs at Growing Hope, we look at needs that are wide ranging. So it could be a learning need, a physical need, a mental health need, an undiagnosed need, anything that is impacting on someone's ability to participate in activity. And therefore, accessibility is around enabling everybody, whoever they are, whatever their needs are, you know, the things that they bring every day are to be able to be a part of community, to be able to experience welcome, and not just to experience welcome, but to be able to be the people that God's created them to be in the settings that they are in.
That's helpful. Thank you. And why do you think this is the church's job?
I think it's the church's job because we read in the Bible, we hear Jesus say in the Great Commission, like, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, enabling everyone to be a part of community and be released in the gifting that I feel God's given them. I think is central to the biblical narrative. Like, we consistently see Jesus drawing people in, just like I was talking about earlier. I think there's this kind of, you know, we see him welcome people who have leprosy, we see him welcome children, we see him talk to the woman at the well. Jesus is constantly flipping on its head what the society at the time says is the norm, and he's not saying, oh, you guys with leprosy, you should be over there. He's saying, you guys with leprosy, like, come on in, be a part of community. And when you look into all of the things that Jesus did as part of his ministry, you see this really amazing way in which he talks to the community at the time and says, actually, what community looks different. Like, in my kingdom, everybody is loved, everybody is valued, everybody has a part to play. And I think there's one story, if it's all right for me to share a story with you.
Yeah, please do. Love that.
So there's one story for me that really encapsulates that, and that's a story of a little girl that I'll call Abby. So I met her quite a long time ago now at a Christian festival, and Abby couldn't walk, she couldn't talk, she couldn't eat by herself, she was fed by a tube in her tummy, and she didn't open her eyes very often. But Abby carried the most incredible sense of God's peace and God's presence with her wherever she went. And it was amazing to get to spend time with her. There was just something amazingly peaceful about her and about being with her. And Abby really sadly died when she was 14. And I got the privilege of going to her funeral, and person after person got up and said, I know more of God because I got to spend time with Abby. And for me, there's the passage in Ephesians 3 where Paul prays that I pray that you may know the love of God that surpasses all knowledge, that you may be filled with the fullness of God. And for me, there's that thing of actually sometimes in our heads or in the way that we do ministry, we expect people to kind of, you know stuff about Jesus, know stuff about their faith, be able to talk to us about it. And actually, I think Abby had this incredible love that surpasses knowledge relationship with Jesus that she reflected so amazingly to people around her. And I think the more we can take off like our own glasses of our cultural perspectives and the narratives that we hold and see things with God's eyes, the more we can reflect Jesus in the way that we build kingdom and welcome everyone as part of church family.
Very much so. And I have that experience too with a friend of ours called Nate, who also went home to be with Jesus when he was 16. And I know that you spent time with Nate and you really understood God's peace. He was able to really reflect that peace. He just rested in God's presence. Whenever you were with him, you knew that. I love that you say, you know, we need to see through God's eyes. We need to see beyond what society says is the norm. A friend of mine says normal is only a cycle on a washing machine, nothing else. And so, you know, God's kingdom is different. We often see that, don't we, that his kingdom flips things on its head. I also want to come back to one other thing that you said at the beginning, that you were 14 when you started on your leadership journey. I know we have people of all different ages listening. Can you talk a little bit about how that came about? How did you start leading something at 14? Weren't you too young?
I think, you know, people often think that, don't they? You know, it's very easy. I mean, it's easy as a 14-year-old to think, oh, no, I couldn't possibly do it because, you know, people won't listen to me. And I do remember having to persuade the adults around me that, you know, it was a good idea and I could do it and I would be able to. I think at that age, I had a really clear vision of what I thought needed to happen. I saw children who weren't being supported to be able to access what was going on. And I thought, actually, someone needs to do something about this. And I could do that. So.
And this was in your local church?
In my local church, a local kind of holiday club. So I saw we had, I think there were maybe 1,000 children that would come and lots of volunteers to a kind of holiday week. And there were various children who had additional needs who came along. And I realised that actually some of them needed one-to-one, some of them needed someone to talk to their group leader, parents needed a form so that we could find out what their specific needs were and how we could best help them. So I gathered some friends and decided that, you know, we could set up a team of people who would give one-to-one support and make sure that everyone was able to join in.
It's so great. I think we should all learn from that, that God can reveal himself to us at any age. And when he asks us to do something, he doesn't say, I'm only asking you this because you're over 21. No, he asks us to do things that actually that was age appropriate for you because you had an understanding and you could see exactly what needed to be done. So thank you for stepping into that because it's led on this beautiful journey now to you offering all kinds of therapies more than just support. So tell us about the therapy that you offer at Growing Hope.
Thank you for your encouragement as well, Sharon. I think it's often you just do what you feel you're called to do, don't you? And then you kind of keep on doing it and you realise what's happened. So I'm an occupational therapist by training. So that means that I look at all the things that children do every day, whether that's getting washed, getting dressed, doing their writing, concentrating, engaging in tasks. I see if there's anything they find difficult, why they might find it difficult and how I can help make it easier. So my experiences in Thailand and India and in private practice were all as an occupational therapist, you know, really trying to meet children's needs and also really kind of having this gap of like knowing my faith was so important and knowing there were moments where probably praying was one of the best solutions that I had and not being able to share that because, you know, in the NHS and also in private practice, that wasn't an option we could provide. And what happens in our clinics is we set them up with a clinic manager. So a clinic manager could be an occupational therapist, could be a speech therapist, could be a music therapist, a counsellor, anybody who works with children and young people, 0 to 18, who has a professional qualification. And then once we've got a clinic manager, they start running the local clinic, they see some families and we start fundraising. And once that clinic grows, then we're able to add more therapists. We currently have 4 clinics across the UK and our King's Cross clinic has 2 occupational therapists, 2 speech and language therapists, a music therapist and a children's counsellor. They're not all full time, but we have grown our therapy service to support as many families as we can.
That sounds very exciting. There's so much in that I want to talk about too, but want to move on and ask about how are families actually referred to you? Do local medical clinics and doctor surgeries know about you and your charity, your ministry?
Yeah, they do. So one of the things in the UK is that there's obviously lots of kind of structure around healthcare and that kind of thing. And we haven't at like a commissioner level been able to offer our service just yet. But actually, we have had referrals from healthcare professionals within the NHS. Lots and lots of schools, SENCOs refer to us, lots of family support services, social services, and then families refer themselves. So everyone can refer via our website. The criteria are pretty broad. They have to live in the area that we're offering the therapy and be appropriate for the therapy that we're offering. But other than that, we tend to accept referrals that we receive.
That's great. So just a brief translation, a Senko would be a special ed teacher of some description within the schooling district, for those of you who don't live in England. You've already talked about the importance of prayer, and that was one of the reasons why you wanted to step outside of the National Health Service, the NHS, that you felt frustrated that you couldn't pray out loud. I'm guessing that, having spent a few minutes with you, that you're the kind of person who prayed quietly anyway, but you wanted to pray out loud. And so that's one way that you've been able to reveal God to your clients. How else do you find ways, how else can you find ways to reveal God to your clients?
Yeah, I think what's been amazing is being able to step into running Growing Hope has been such a privilege for me. I love my job. I love being an occupational therapist. I love being able to see small changes make a big difference to families. And I really love Jesus. And I really love being able to share God with people. And that's such an important part of me, an important part of what I'm doing. And as you say, I was absolutely praying in my head in those moments that I wasn't able to pray out loud. I think the privilege of setting up Growing Hope is that we're very openly Christian, so we do what we say on the tin. Our website is very openly Christian. Our appointment letters say why we do what we do, and we talk about the fact that we are always going to offer prayer to people. We're open to anyone of all faiths, but that's a part of who we are. So I think what that looks like is, you know, we've thought quite carefully about the wording that we use, because obviously when you're doing therapy, there's a bit of a power dynamic there. So we have the opportunity to pray at the end of the session so that people don't feel kind of coerced into it. And we always say to them, you know, we believe Jesus brings hope in people's lives. We'd love to pray for you if you'd like to pray, but there's no pressure if you don't want to. Is there anything you'd like to pray about? And we found that is there anything you'd like to pray about question quite helpful, because people can be like, oh, no, thanks. Or they can be like, yeah, can you pray for this, this and this and this? And what is an absolute privilege is that, you know, majority of families who come to the service don't have any faith background or haven't really been in church settings before. The clinic is in the church building and we offer them prayer and the vast majority say yes. I've got families who have Muslim faith or no faith, different backgrounds, who are asking for prayer and support with all sorts of things, whether that's sleep or Arsenal winning the football or, you know, various things, or someone sick in their family. And then we also talk about how we use the church. So we do the clinic in the church space and our clinic managers work on a Sunday. So the idea is that we enable church to be as accessible as possible. So that clinic manager is there as a point of contact on a Sunday, enabling families to come along. We've got visual schedules and fidget toys and one-to-one support and things that a family might need. When I first started Growing Hope, I had one family who came to the clinic and I was like, you know, and also you can come along to church, you're so welcome. She was like, what? We can come to church? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you can come to church. You're so welcome. She was like, no, we can't come. And I was like, yeah, you can. You can come. And they had basically not been in church for, I think, 3 or 4 years because of her son's autism and the level of needs that he has. And they did end up coming along to church and found it to be a place where they could experience family and safety and hope. And that's just such a joy to be able to be doing that and to explore faith as well. We've had families come along who, you know, haven't explored faith before, and just being able to talk about why we're doing what we're doing is amazing.
There's so much in that as well. You really are revealing God in so many different areas. And two questions there that I'd like to pick up on that we can all use. One question is, how can I pray for you? You can ask that to anybody. People know that when we go out and eat, which is a much more frequent thing here in America, we always ask our server, we're going to pray over our meal. How can we pray for you today? And we've been here 14 years and I've had one person say, no, thanks. One. Everyone else is like, yeah, well, actually, you're right. We want the Cowboys to win. That's the American version of Arsenal. And my mum's not well, whatever. So there are beautiful opportunities. And second of all, the other question is, would you like to come to church with me? Oh, my goodness. Such a simple question that that family really thought they were not invited anymore. And you just reopened that door for them. So brilliant. Are you saying that all of your clinics are always in churches?
Yeah, they are. So the charity is run as a partnership between the local church, the national charity, which is this kind of vehicle of support. That's most of my job is around running that charity so that we can then enable churches to partner with us and do this locally. So we kind of give all the structure, insurance, policy, governance, supervision, setup, procedures, fundraising support, finance support. And we do it in the church building as much as possible so that families are coming into the church, so they're already familiar with that space. A child with autism, for example, example, finds it difficult to experience different spaces. So having somewhere that's vaguely familiar with them could be helpful. The only time we don't have it in the church building is if it's a community church that doesn't have a building, in which case we would rent a space nearby and still invite them along to church.
That's really interesting that you have thought about the way that people with additional needs often need to feel comfortable about somewhere before they want to go and experience anything in that room. So the fact that you are already in a church, so when you're saying come to church, you're just saying let's walk through into that room and go into a worship service. That's just so beautiful. You're listening to God in the Ordinary with me, Sharon Tedford, and my guest, Naomi Graham. We'd love you to subscribe to our podcast. Leave a rating and review on your favourite platform. It helps us a lot and we'd really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Naomi, it can be really hard being the parent of a child with additional needs. I'm sure you've seen that over and over again. So how do you support parents who have particularly recently received that news? And where do you see Jesus in those conversations?
Yeah, so we think it's really important to consider the whole family. As I said at the beginning, one of our values is around community and everyone being seen, heard and able to belong. I'm always surprised at the number of times that families say to me, oh, no one ever asks me how I am, when I stop and ask them how they are. And when we try and, you know, as one of our values, just remember parents' names and really get to know them, you know, it's, I guess, because people are busy and it's hard to do that. But it makes so much difference to families even starting there. But one of the things we want to do is really value the whole family. So we've got a course for parents and carers called When Dreams Change, which is all about what happens when your hopes and dreams change because of your children's needs. So it's a 4-week video-based course that we walk parents and carers through. We look at the grief cycle. We look at how we fill up our own cup to give to our children. We look at who's in our support network. And it's all based on the story of Joseph from the Bible. Joseph in his technicolor dream coat, but different bits of Joseph's story and what it looks like to walk through things that are potentially challenging and what it looks like to dream again. We find that in those courses, parents, you know, say things like, oh, I can't believe that this person sitting next to me knows what it's like to be in my position, or, you know, I didn't realize how much I was hiding of myself, or I didn't realize that I hadn't really thought about when I need help or asking for help. So, and there are opportunities where we've run the course with parents and we've seen two single mums, for example, who got to know each other through When Dreams Change and then ended up going on holiday together, which is amazing.
Oh.
Yeah, really building community. And what we do with that course is we train people all across the UK. We have trained people internationally. We have a facilitator training course that enables people to be able to run When Dreams Change in schools or churches or communities. And it's an amazing way to be supporting families.
That's really helpful because children with additional needs always have parents. And you're right, sometimes they just get forgotten or overlooked, not because people don't care, but because resources are limited. But because you're offering additional, that's just so helpful to everybody. So this edition of God in the Ordinary is going out on World Mental Health Day, which is particularly why we wanted to talk to you. Have you seen that you can bring changes to people by helping them think about mental health in different ways through the lens of Jesus?
Yeah, I think one of the things is around the value piece that we were talking about earlier of enabling everyone to be seen, heard and able to belong and knowing that they can be the person they've been created to be. So that's actually one of the phrases we use a lot in our When Dreams Change course, is about being the person you've been created to be. And we often see both parents and carers and siblings in across the things that we do at Growing Hope. We have a siblings group as well. And we know that actually for parents, carers and siblings, mental health challenges are much higher. So there's higher rates of anxiety and depression for parents and carers. There's often experiences of isolation for siblings and challenges in terms of their own like relationships with others. I think we often see that actually there's this real need and hunger to know that they're not rejected, that they don't have to be isolated. And there's a real opportunity for us as Christians to step out and do that. One of the things that we do at Growing Hope is we really try and create an atmosphere where we are really speaking value over people. We're choosing to say, you know, we believe that you are valuable. We believe that God's created you and that there's so much that you have to bring. And I think that there's this opportunity that we have to be able to do that in the way that we present our service. So families often say to us, oh gosh, it felt so peaceful. I feel so seen. And, you know, we ask parents what their names are and we remember their names. And actually, so often people don't remember their names when they go to appointments. And I think when we offer pray, one of the things that I love about that is we get to use that as an opportunity to speak that value over people. So if I'm praying for a family, I might pray for them, not just as Tommy's mum, but as themselves. And I'd be saying, I pray for Sarah. I thank you, God, for who she is. I thank you for the mum that she is. I thank you for all that she's been putting in. And I think that can be a really amazing way that we get to support people in their mental health and help people to be seen and heard.
Very much. Now, most of us listening are not specifically trained to support children with additional needs in the way that you are. So how can we reveal God to people in our own communities? Because we absolutely do all know people who have children with additional needs, people who we know in the supermarket, people who we meet at the library, people who we stand next to at the school gates. How can we reveal God to them?
Amazing thing to think about. I think the first thing that we can do is just say hello. I think one of the things that I often talk about when I'm doing training is that it's so easy for us to be afraid, isn't it? When we see difference or we encounter difference, it can kind of throw us off a bit. We don't quite know what to do. And I love that bit in Joshua 1:9 where it says, be bold and courageous, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And we can be bold and courageous in the way that we say hello. Like, we can say hello, we can choose to talk to the child, young person, adult in front of us who has additional needs. Even if we're not sure how they're going to respond, we can give them time to then respond to us before we turn to a parent or carer. We can ask parents and carers what might be helpful, what they need. You know, so often we don't ask what someone might need. We don't say, how can I help you? And actually mean, how can I help you? We just mean, oh no, don't really ask me. So we can be genuine in the way that we do that. And we can also choose to remember things. We can be welcoming in the way that we remember people have told us, or remembering people's names, I think, makes a big difference. Often for parents and carers of children with additional needs, we've been talking about isolation. Do you feel quite isolated from community? So actually thinking about, you know, could we have a play date? What would that look like to have a safe play date for them? Might that look like going to the park where their child can really run around? Or might it look like actually being safe in a home where there's a locked door and there isn't going to be the way their child might run away? You know, really working out what that looks like and being open to saying, actually, I'd love to do anything to help. Could I do a load of washing for you? Could I bring you a meal one day? Could I look after your child so that you can have a coffee and have a moment to yourself? Or could I take a sibling out? Could I take them for a coffee? Would they like a chance to just chat to an adult? There are lots of different things we can do like that. And then practically in church, there's loads of stuff we can be doing as well. Simple things like having ear defenders available for individuals who it's a bit too noisy for, having pipe cleaners, so like they've got something in their hands to hold to help them to be able to join in and listen. That's the same as, you know, if we doodle or that kind of thing, it helps us listen. So having a pipe cleaner gives people a tool that they can use while they're trying to listen to stuff. Having a schedule, a visual schedule of photos or even written words of what's happening, when it's going to happen, can make a massive difference to lots of people being able to come in and engage in church and know what's happening and when it's going to happen. So there's just some quick things.
Really helpful, simple, but really, really useful things for people to be able to put by the door of your church. So somebody's listening today, I bet you, someone's listening thinking, I want to do this in my church. Maybe there's some people who are actually trained as physical therapists or occupational therapists who are thinking, I could use my work skills here in my church. Do you mind what country they live in and can they talk to you about it?
No, I don't mind what country they live in. And yes, absolutely, you can talk to me about it. Yeah, we'd love people to get in touch. Our website is growinghope.org.uk and they can email us. We've got info@growinghope.org.uk or Instagram or Twitter. We're Growing Hope UK on there. So lots of ways people can get in touch. And I'd really love to have conversations with people. Our vision is to have 20 churches across the UK by 2030 partnering with us. But that doesn't mean we're not open to churches further afield or to sharing our learning.
So people can call you and just say, actually, I attend a church and we're not thinking of opening a clinic, but what can I do to help people with additional needs who are coming? Would you be able to help them?
Absolutely. We also do lots of accessibility training. We have an accessibility award that churches can get, a bronze, silver or gold award that looks at accessibility, not just from a physical point of view, but from all of the things that we've talked about in terms of multi-sensory stuff and really welcoming everyone. So there are lots of different ways that people can find out more and gain more. Our facilitator training as well. So train people to do our When Dreams Change course and our siblings groups for their local communities. And again, there's opportunities for people to do those kind of internationally via Zoom.
That's really helpful to know. So Zoom, in person, you need to contact Naomi and her team. Tell us once more where people can find you, Naomi.
growinghope.org.uk is our website.
Thank you. It's absolutely been wonderful to chat to you. I want to gather it all up for everybody because Naomi's given us some really useful, simple questions to ask. Say hello. Say hello to people. Say hello to somebody standing next to you in the queue in Walmart or Tesco's. Just say hello, be friendly and remember their name. That's a struggle for me. Then ask, how are you? And mean it. You can ask, how can I pray for you today? And don't forget the important question, would you like to come to church with me? Those things are something that we can all do that will help all of us reveal God in our ordinary everyday lives. Naomi, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to God in the Ordinary with me, Sharon Tedford, and my guest for World Mental Health Day, Dr. Naomi Graham. To get in touch with Naomi and the team, go to growinghope.org.uk.
For more information and show notes, go to 61-things.com. Producer is Gary Dell, and God in the Ordinary is a Wise Word Radio 61 Things co-production.